Welcome to the Stronger Than Your Boyfriend podcast, a podcast for anyone into fitness, especially those who are addicted to feeling sore. This one is for you. We are Heather and Katie, owners of Barpath Fitness, and we're here to help you sift through the bullshit and toxic misinformation in the fitness industry. Today, we are going to talk about muscle soreness. So muscle soreness is something that we're probably all familiar with, right? And it happens when you place a new stimulus on the body. So you've probably heard of something called DOMS, and that is delayed onset muscle soreness. And it usually happens about 12 to 24, sometimes 48 hours after a workout. And your muscles feel fatigued, tender to touch, maybe some swelling and some impaired movement short term.
Yeah. So before we get into like what actually it means to be sore, I feel like that's not the big issue here. I think the biggest issue that both you and I see is when people equate soreness with a good workout. I see this all the time. And also, by the way, we are currently getting over COVID. So if we sound a little nasally, that is why. COVID decided to attack my sinuses. So here we go. But anyways, we see people all the time and we see them say, oh, I'm not getting sore from my workouts. I'm failing. And it's like, okay, let's calm down a second. If you've been strength training for a decent amount of time, getting super sore all the time is actually telling me that you're overtraining. So you're probably overdoing the volume and intensity. So if you're constantly sore, your body is never going to adapt to the stimulus you're giving it, right? So it's if you are trying to get that soreness every single time, it's actually going to backfire a lot on you. And again, like if you're newer, you're probably going to get sore a little bit more often until your body gets stronger. But if you're one of those people who are like, oh, like I can't get over this soreness, and you know, I've been training for 5 years, and it's like, it's pretty simple. All you need to do is just dial it back a little bit. Because if your body is in constant soreness, that's telling me that your body is in constant recovery mode versus train, recover. And the key here is adapt, right? That is key. So like some soreness is going to happen, right? But when you have that extreme soreness all the time, then that's telling me you're doing way too much. And you will have that extreme soreness here and there, but it should be happening not often at all. And it's usually like when you change your programming or you're doing like a completely new exercise or something like that. So
yeah, training is all about balancing recovery and work output, right? So you're sometimes going to get sore when a workout is more intense or the stimulus is new. So there's a new exercise, there's a new tempo, you're doing some sort of new training method, something like that. But you don't want every session to result in soreness. Typically, it's the first week of like a new training block is when you usually feel the most soreness from new exercises.
Yeah. And even with that type of soreness, it shouldn't be like debilitating soreness. If it is, again, like you did way too much. Like who really wants to walk around, you know, they can't sit down in the toilet, they can't, you know, it hurts getting up off of a chair all the time. And like, basically all you want to do is sit around on the couch all day. Like that seems so counterproductive to me. And I don't know why people chase that. And I feel like people don't usually chase that, but it's like, when people do feel that, they're like, oh my God, like I got such a good workout. And I'm like, no, you didn't. But yeah, anyways, leading me to people actually don't know what being sore means. So when you're sore, you basically created damage to your muscle and your central nervous system in that area that you're sore is creating that feeling of tightness and quote unquote soreness in preparation for the whatever stimulus you put upon it to happen again. So really, when you want to help mitigate that soreness, you basically need to tell your CNS to calm down in those spots. And I feel like Heather, both you and I first starting out in fitness, we were probably taught, or we were taught in our certifications, like, oh yeah, like you're breaking up adhesions, like, like you're breaking up your muscle tissue. And it's like, not quite. You would probably just like melt if that happened. So yeah.
Yeah. So now that we've kind of established that soreness does not equal a good workout, and you will sometimes be sore, but we don't want it to be debilitating and we want to try to avoid it as much as possible. Let's talk about how to recover from soreness.
Yeah.
So like Katie was saying, foam rolling and things like that. We're going to start with talking about foam rollers. We've been told that this is kind of like self-myofascial release, right? Breaking up tissue, et cetera, et cetera. But let's talk about the studies. The studies out there are mixed on what's actually happening when you're doing foam rolling. Okay. So for instance, studies actually conflict on whether foam rolling calms the nervous system or excites it.
there's studies that show it does both, which makes sense, right? Because we know that people use foam rollers both for recovery after workout and for warm-ups. So it makes sense that it could be used for either one. Also, in some of these studies, the way that you breathe when using the foam roller also changes the outcomes a bit on your sympathetic nervous system. So the other question, aside from does it actually calm your nervous system or excite it, is are we actually releasing fascia? Maybe, maybe not, probably not. So myofascial release, it typically requires a trained hand, right, to do properly. And so that'd be someone who's trained in chiropractic or massage or something like that. And some foam rolling experts have even gone so far as to say we should get rid of the term self-myofascial release completely because we aren't really sure if it's possible to do it ourselves. So are we breaking up tissue? Probably not. Also, side note, you don't need to roll your IT band. It's a waste of time. It's a big band of connected tissue. You can't roll it out. If you have IT band issues, chances are there's something going on at your hip that you need to address. But just a quick side note.
Yeah. And it makes sense when you talk about the breathing and foam rolling. Like, I feel like that's 100% key because, like, imagine if you were foam rolling, like, after your workout, whatever, and you're trying to basically go into that parasympathetic state and your breathing's like this, like you can't right. catch it. Like you're exciting your nervous system while you're doing that. So it's like almost like competing signals. And to me, that would like activate everything because you're just like about to go into an ice bath or something. Like exactly. You're just like preparing. But if you can actually control your breath and, you know, practice that diaphragmatic breathing, like I think you will be able to help your nervous system calm down. So if you're targeting a specific area that feels sore or tight and you're, you know, implementing that breathing with it, I think that's the most bang for your buck when you're trying to get rid of that soreness. But again, like the best way to do it is just manage your volume and intensity, right?
Yeah. Well, and with foam rolling, so one of the things that helps soreness is to promote blood flow to the area, right? Mm-hmm. So that makes sense that even if you're foam rolling and even if it is exciting things, like you are getting blood flow to that area. So it could be beneficial for soreness for that reason.
Yeah. And I want to go back to like the myofascial release. Like it kind of disproves itself when you think about a couple cases, and one of them is a massage. Like some people get really, really sore after massages, right? Because it was really intense to the muscle. So if all you were doing in a massage was breaking up that scar tissue and, you know, helping, you know, recover from that soreness, well, that would never happen, right? So you would never actually get sore from a massage. But like if you're, you know, if you're getting a massage that's more intense than you normally do, or it's just more of a stimulus than you normally have, like, you know, like a deep tissue massage, you're probably going to get a little bit sore. And it's like, did you do the opposite of what you were trying to accomplish with the massage, or did you actually, you know, help recovery? So I think it kind of just depends, right? It depends on what type of massage you're going for and the goal of it, really. Like when I get a massage, I want them to dig in as hard as humanly possible. And I'll probably get a little bit sore from that. But, you know, that's me. And I like to do everything, you know, 100% intensity. Totally. Another example is I heard this, I don't know, years ago, but it made a ton of sense to me when I heard it. So like, okay, imagine if it was the case, you were breaking up the scar tissue, whatever you want to call it. When you do a barbell back squat, the bar rests on your upper back, right? So it's digging into your back, right? So it's pushing into the muscle, kind of like a massage or like a foam rolling session or something like that. Okay, now let's imagine big power lifter, big dude, he's squatting at like, I don't know, something like 500 pounds. And that 500 pounds is digging into their back. So it's essentially digging into their muscles, right? Like we just said. So if you were literally breaking up adhesions or scar tissue or whatever, that power lifter, that person would basically melt from the amount of load being placed upon the traps and how the barbell is digging into them, right? To help that person, you know, to help that person stabilize the weight, right? So like if that were the case, there would be literally no way you could hold any type of weight on your back or just like in general, if that were the case, right?
So true.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then like going back to massage, because we were talking about that versus foam rolling, like with massage. So not only are you getting a trained hand to work on the tissue, but also there's this benefit of compassionate touching or human touch, which is has a benefit for recovery as well, being touched by another human. So just kind of wanted to point that out about massage. Now, if you like foam rolling, there probably is a short-term benefit because it feels good. And it can, like we said, bring blood flow to the area. And so then it can also increase your range of motion short term. So it can increase your ability to move in a certain range of motion right after foam rolling directly. So sure, keep doing it if you love it. It's not supposed to be like super, super painful, just so you know. And if you feel like it's providing a stress release, then it probably is. So that's another thing to think about when it comes to recovery. Like if you think something's working, there's probably a mental benefit there that's actually working.
Yeah, I feel like that's most forms of recovery, right? I feel like,
yeah.
I know we can't prove this, but I feel like at least like 50% of the recovery you're feeling is in your head.
Right.
I mean, I feel like that's most things anyways, but I don't know. It's just my opinion.
So aside from foam rolling, let's talk about other ways to help with short-term soreness or help deal with soreness. What other ways can we combat that muscle soreness?
All right. So I have the like ultimate secretive hack for you guys. Mm. Okay. Like just get ready for this.
All right, let's go.
Sleeping enough, eating enough protein,
what?
Hydrating, walking is I think one of the most beneficial ways to help your soreness, just because especially like y'all know the debilitating like hamstring soreness you've had before.
Oh my gosh.
Where it's like you can't, you know, go pee because you can't sit down in the toilet, and it's like you can't get out of bed and yada yada yada. I think walking is the best way, just because you know, your legs are a big muscle, you're using those muscles when you walk, and it's very light and it's low impact, and it's just, you can do it for, you know, a long period of time. Obviously you don't need to do it all day, but you know, I think periodically throughout the day and just getting some movement in is probably one of the best. And y'all know we love that cold therapy. I think that's a nice hack, I guess you could say.
Yes, little plug, go back and listen to, I think it's episode 10, I want to say.
Yeah,
cold therapy,
and we have a blog on it too. So yeah, I mean, it's the basic stuff, you guys. We've already talked about this and we've hammered it, you know, in multiple episodes, multiple times. But again, like if your workouts are making you sore all the time, then you really need to rethink what workouts you're doing. Like you'd be surprised by how many people I just kind of like randomly help in, like, you know, Facebook groups, stuff like that, like answer questions. And they're like, oh, I train like 5 times a week and I'm constantly sore. And you know, I just like, I don't know how to like stop being so sore all the time. And I'm like, why don't you train 3 times a week, full body? That way you're not hammering a muscle, you know, for 60 minutes, you know, every week, or, you know, even sometimes for people, they do it twice a week, for 60 minutes or whatever, however long their workout is. Which brings me to a point that I just came up with, that I feel like that is one of the best ways to really not get super sore, is to do full body routines, just because you're not doing like a full on leg day where you're just like pumping, you know, so much, right, doing so much volume into, for one specific muscle group. But you know, you're touching the main compound lifts, which is hitting all of your muscles in your body, but it's not so, specialized. It's not the right word. You know, individualized for whatever muscle group that you're trying to work, like a chest and triceps day. And you're like, the only goal for me is to get my chest as sore as possible.
I want the pump.
Yeah, like pump, bro. And like, yeah, the pump is cool, but like,
yeah, it is.
Let's try to be more effective for most people. But okay, well, I wanted to go over like what are good indicators of a good workout that we can leave people here? Because I feel like people need something like objectively to feel, to know that they had a good workout. And that's why soreness is such a big deal for people. And it's like, oh, I gotta get sore or else I didn't do enough or whatever. So what is your like number one?
My number one is achieving something. So walking away from a workout, feeling like you achieved something new. So if you're working toward a skill, if you're recording videos of yourself, or if it, you know, there's a bunch of different ways to tell, or to measure this, but if your movement felt better, or if it looked better, if it moved better, if I owned the lift, if I had more control, if I did, you know, a little bit more than I could last time, and not necessarily with weight, but mostly control, that makes me feel like the workout was successful. And that's not going to happen every time, but like, that's my favorite way to measure the success of a.
Yeah. And that's like, I love that you gave so many different examples, just because like it could be as simple as you just like incorporating some more like mobility into your, your warm up or something in order for you to like connect to a certain muscle that you didn't connect to before. Like for you, Heather, that would be like your glutes something.
Totally.
Like, you know, adding some glute priming movements and some hip mobility beforehand, and just having that structured workout kind of gets you to do that. And now you're able to connect to your glutes doing like, you know, deadlifts, hip thrusts, things like that.
It completely changes the workout. Yeah. When like you do the correct priming movements for sure.
Yeah. And it's like, it's obviously really cool to like have those workouts where, you know, you hit that PR or, you know, you achieve that muscle up or handstand or whatever. But honestly, the best indicator of a workout to me is just showing up and doing it. Like I know it's like the old adage, like, you know, you're the best or the worst workouts are the ones you don't show up for or something like that. Some cheesy statement or whatever, but like, it's kind of true. Like, I really don't know anyone that doesn't feel good or at least, you know, come out of a workout feeling like a little bit better than they did before, even if they're having a shit day, even if they're just kind of like going through the motions. Like, movement is just necessary and it's key. And I think that kind of like brings me to my point. Like, if you, a good indicator of a good workout is just feeling good after. Like, you don't have to achieve anything. If that, you know, some days you're just not going to have anything that you want to achieve or that you, you know, physically, you know, feel well enough to achieve. But sometimes it's just going, you know, moving your body, you know, getting some sort of a stimulus there. And then you walk out of that and you have, you know, you feel good. You feel good about yourself. You feel good about showing up. You know, you're kind of riding that endorphin high, even though that doesn't last forever. But yeah, I think those two things are really keys to focus on, because if you have good programming, you don't need to like focus on these objective things. Like, that's why it's really important to have that good programming, because you won't have to worry about stupid shit. Like, did I get sore enough? Like, did I feel the burn enough? Did I get a big enough pump? Like, all that shit is fine. And it, like, you know, it works to an extent, but it's like, that doesn't mean you had a good workout. Like, just following your program and, you know, eating right and sleeping enough and like managing your stress, like that means you had a good workout, and that's how you're going to adapt from the stimulus you're providing it. So
yeah. And it all kind of goes back to that rule of thirds, I think, that we talked about before, right? At least I like that concept, right? A third of the time it's going to feel awesome and you're going to feel like, hell yeah, that was such a great workout. A third of the time it's going to feel like shit and you're going to be like, wow, that was terrible. I didn't like that. That was painful, but I did it anyway. And then a third of the time it's just going to be like clockwork. You show up, you do it. Nothing special, nothing terrible. Like, that's just the way it should be.
Yeah. And I feel like that the last one you said there, just like showing up, nothing special happening, I feel like that's going to be the majority of the time with training.
Yeah. And that's probably an indicator of a good workout, honestly.
Yeah,
that's like, probably number one.
Yeah. I mean, not saying that you shouldn't go in and like, you know, have a goal for like your movements or your training session in general, but it's like, some days it's just putting in the work. Like, for example, Matt, my client, he's training handstands right now. And we started, it's been at least over a year now. And most of the sessions, you know, where we got his balance up and up, his hand balancing, you know, well enough, I guess, to progress him to just kind of kicking up and seeing where he's at and being able to hold. And I'm telling you, 95% of his sessions are just him kicking up and falling, kicking up and falling. And now he's to the point where he's kicking up and he's holding, and he's holding for 5 seconds. Now and he progressed to 10 seconds. And it's like, I know this is kind of a more extreme example because handstand is definitely just as much of a skill, you know, as a strength movement, but that's exactly how I felt when I was trying to, achieve a handstand. It felt like I was literally going nowhere, but it was just about like me putting in the reps. And then all of a sudden one day I was like, I can kick up and hold. And then it started happening every day, like when I tried. So it's just kind of like, sometimes it doesn't feel like you're making that progress, but like if you have a good program and you're, you know, following it consistently, which is obviously, you know, one of the most important things, then I know you will see the results that you're wanting to see. So
Olympic lifting's a lot like that too.
Yeah. I mean, I did that too. And yeah. I was like, what? Like, I'm just
every day, just not really adding weight. Just
yeah. You just
doing
work
the same thing. Yeah, you feeling work, like shit. Like,
you work with the bar. You remember that? Remember when we got certified and we did that certification, we literally work with PVC pipes the first day and we were just like drenched with sweat. We like were starving after, because it was literally like 8 hours of just drilling the basics.
Oh, and my then, traps were so sore.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, that's extreme because we were doing like 8 hours straight for 2 days in a row. But then, you know, I feel like by the end of the second day, we kind of had, I mean, obviously it takes a lot longer than 2 days. And granted, they were like really intensive. But I mean, I feel like we had, you know, at least like some semblance of the basics, at least for the clean. The snatch is a lot harder. But
we kind of figured out triple extension almost by day two.
Yeah. But it's just like when I was training to compete in Olympic lifting, I feel like I never added weight to the bar. And then it was like, oh, let's try it one day. And then, you know, you kind of fall and you like you miss all the time. And then it's like,
and it's like a kilo. Yeah. If that, or like half a kilo. Well, like it's.
Yeah. You can't add like a snatch. Like it's one of the most scary things you'll do with a barbell. Like you literally just, I don't know. It's like a magical thing that happens from the ground to overhead. And then the bar's over your head and you're like, how did it get there? I have no idea. Yeah. Anyways, I read that it for a session, like a snatch session. This is just like a fun side note. The amount of time you're actually lifting is like 45 seconds. Like, and if you did something like 20 reps, like the amount of time you lift is like 30 to 45 seconds. That's how fast you move the barbell and how fast a rep happens. So anyways, just to illustrate that. But all right, cool. So moral of the story, don't rely on soreness for an indicator of a good workout. There are way better ways to do it. So,
and if you are feeling sore, just get out and move a little bit, maybe do your favorite relaxation technique, whatever that may be.
And that, like, to build off that, I don't want to like scare people into thinking like, oh, okay, you did get sore. You got really sore. Oh my God. Like you're, you know, backtracking now and now you're not going to progress. Like, no, that's not the case. It's just, if it's a consistent thing where you're consistently getting really sore, then you need to take a look at your programming. But if it happens once in a while with a new stimulus or new program, like it's okay.
Yeah, we have that still.
Yeah, like I have that all the time. Like when my coach changes my phase of programming, like I'll get a little bit of soreness. So it's okay. It's just you need to manage it properly.
Right.
All right.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. We hope that you will leave us a little rating on this podcast and share it with a friend if you like it. Please remember to join our Facebook group, Stronger Than Your Boyfriend. We are doing some Q&As in that group and answering some questions on the podcast. So
drop the questions.
In. Yeah.
And follow us on the social meds.
Social media.
What are we? TikTok?
My Slack is blowing up right now.
Instagram.
Yes.
And Facebook.
All of those.
That's it.
Yeah. We'll see you next week.